This is the KWBU Fine-Tuned Music Series. I'm Kately Mills. Today, my conversation with two members of the contemporary classical group, Latitude 49. Chris Size and Janie Parsons both teach in the School of Music at Baylor University. Let's take a listen to their piece, A Wish for the Displaced, that was composed by Virgil Moorfield. Welcome, Chris and Janie, to the Fine Tune Music Series. I'm glad to have you both here.
It's great to be here.
Thank you.
So first, I'd like to start by learning how each of you became interested in a career in music. Who wants to start?
Sure, I can start. So I became interested in music when I was really young, actually, and it just sort of blossomed into something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I started piano lessons when I was 5 years old. Like many young pianists, I went through the rigors of piano lessons. And when I was a teenager is really when things kind of took root. And I realized how special music was to me and just something that I couldn't separate myself from. It was just a really integral part of who I was. So that was sort of the impetus for me studying music more professionally in college. And I always say to my students, you should study music if it's the only thing that you want to do. And that's sort of what my situation was. It was pretty much the only thing I could imagine myself doing.
Whenever you first started out playing piano, what were kind of the types of music you liked to play?
Oh, I played a whole wide variety. In a typical way that a lot of young students do, I went through some method books and I studied with actually pretty good community teachers in my hometown. And learned a variety of stuff. I played early classical music. I also did participate in my church's praise band, and so I would play off lead sheets in sort of improvisational way. Mm. And so it was kind of a mix. I never really got into jazz per se, but I kind of have that combo of playing music that's written on a score and also being able to play stuff from lead sheets.
And so later on, whenever you went to college, did you learn any other instruments?
Primarily in college, it was just focused on piano.
On piano.
Yeah. Of course, there are some requirements here and there,
yeah,
and, you know, to participate in large ensembles and things like that. But most of my training was in piano. I took some voice lessons when I was in high school. I got really kind of excited about what was possible with my voice. I think because I went to a piano competition that happened to be coinciding with a voice competition, heard all these amazing singers. So that was sort of a, you know, side interest, but something I love as well.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What about you, Chris?
Very similar situation in that I started playing, I guess, drums when I was between 5 or 7. I can't remember. I think more 7-ish, but I'll never forget this. I was watching MTV. I'm the youngest of 3, so MTV was definitely on for my older brothers. But Van Halen came on TV, and Alex Van Halen, the drummer, his drum set's like totally enormous. It's just like 1,000 drums. And I remember seeing that on TV, and I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. You know, enter setting up pots and pans and playing on them with spoons and whatnot. My parents were really supportive, and one day I came home from school, and it was really quiet. It was a Monday, and I was like, uh-oh, something wrong? And I walk in the living room, and it's like, there is my drum set.
Oh, my goodness.
It was magical. So I kind of grew up playing a lot by ear, and grew up playing in a lot of bands, playing mostly rock, and then later some heavy metal and quite a bit of jazz. And I realized drum set's just like one part of the puzzle for me. And I had some really great teachers suggest that I should try out some other instruments in the percussion family, including like marimba, xylophone, timpani, yeah, these sort of things, in addition to a bunch of hand drums. And that led me to go to school for percussion. And like a percussion degree is kind of impossible because there are so many instruments.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like virtually every culture in the world has its version of percussion. The school I was at was really great in that it was really part of the curriculum to get a well-rounded experience and try a bunch of different music from different cultures. So not only was I spending time learning, you know, classical music and jazz and things like this, but I was also working on Afro-Cuban music, Brazilian samba, and bunch of different things. I also played with a Middle Eastern orchestra for a while that was based in Dearborn, Michigan.
Yeah,
so it's been a wild mix. But again, you know, like percussion is just like this,
you know,
it's all over.
I asked, I actually interviewed a band who had this drummer locally who's in like 4 other bands here. And I asked him, because I've heard this saying that drummers always have a gig.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's like the more instruments you know how to play, the more you'll work.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely the case. And, well, Janie and I lived in Chicago before we moved here.
Is that how you met?
We met in school, actually.
Oh, really? Where'd y'all both go?
We studied at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Janie was... Janie's a little bit older than I, and she was a graduate student, and I was an undergraduate, and I definitely had a crush on her the entire time. She didn't know it until way later. All the secrets came out, but yeah, definitely a big crush.
So how did y'all both get connected with Latitude 49 then?
Well, I'm one of the 3 founding members that's currently still in the group. And at that time, we were really just looking for an opportunity as graduate students to explore and expand our repertoire. So a lot of us were very serious about classical music and had been studying diligently on our instruments and in more traditional settings like an orchestra, and for me, as a lot of solo repertoire. And I felt like I need to do something different. And so that was sort of where the impetus came from, was just a desire to do something that would kind of stretch me outside of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking with my good friend Andy Hall, who's our saxophonist in the group, and saying, wouldn't it be fun if we could play new music together? Because saxophone is a relatively new instrument. And we started thinking about what kind of ensemble would have a wide variety of sounds,
yeah,
and, you know, have a real diverse palette that we would be interested in pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of narrowed down to a Puro Plus is what it's called in our world. And that's just a term that comes from a famous piece, Puro Lunaire, which is a mixed ensemble of piano, strings, and winds. And so the Puro Plus is basically piano, strings, winds, and percussion.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So We settled on that as an instrumentation because there's already some music written for that, and we knew that we didn't want to start with zero music. We kind of wanted to get our feet wet with some music that's already in existence. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of where it took off from there. We asked a variety of friends to join us, and there were some people in school at that time who were very interested in exploring new music.
So this was all started while y'all were still at college?
Yeah, we were all in college at the University of Michigan, and it was a total pet project. It wasn't anything that we had registered classes for. It was just something we were...
A passion project.
Yeah, a passion project.
And extracurricular.
Yeah, yeah, and we loved it. It started out really with a bang, you know, like right off the gate, we had everybody on the same page and wanting to be involved and participate in things. And so that was sort of the foundation of the group getting started. And things transformed over the next couple years. Chris joined us in our second year. Mm-hmm. And our percussionist Kyle moved to Thailand, actually. So, you know, right away with that group, we had to figure out how we were going to manage with change. Mm-hmm. And there's always going to be change in a group as people grow and move and all those kinds of things. So Chris was an easy yes, and he had been someone that I had heard him play before and heard his own music and heard him in concerts and really thought he was a good fit for the vibe that we were going for, which was a little more experimental as opposed to a classical player who's kind of in the box, so to speak. So, yeah, it just kind of went from there. Things started to kind of take off, and we were a few years as an LLC. We basically, you know, went through and got the paperwork for that, so at least we could write ourselves checks. Small, tiny, itty-bitty $15 checks.
Just to cover the gas.
Yeah, there you go.
But, that was kind of the start, and now we're in our seventh year, and we're a nonprofit organization, and we have a board, and things have really grown. We're now at a point where we have, you know, six members that are we're all each other's very good friends, and we all live across in different places. We have someone in Houston, we're here in Waco, our saxophonist is still in Ann Arbor, our clarinetist is at Greensboro in North Carolina, he teaches at UNCG, and our violinist is the assistant principal of the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra in Canada, West Coast. So we're a little bit all over the map.
No kidding.
You know? So that's part of kind of what we prioritized, was we really wanted to stay a group of close friends and not be bound by location, since we're all in the early parts of our career and figuring out how and what our careers will look like and where we will live.
Yeah.
We wanted to keep our group strong and have it be not just a matter of the members that just happen to be where we are, but really the core group and making it work.
So whenever you were setting it up as students, whenever you were researching and putting it all together and coming up with the final plan for Latitude 49, were there other groups like this that you saw that you were like, hey, I like what they're doing, we're going to...
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
For sure.
How big is this community of like these...
It's a strong community.
It's a strong community. Yeah. It's growing. It is niche, if you think about it, in the, you know, the whole music world. It is a small window of the music world.
How would you label it, like a genre, like genre wise, or
contemporary classical would be probably the most common term. Classical is a weird term in and of itself, because it sort of makes you think that it's classic, meaning old.
Yeah.
But I think what's defined by that term is a little more on the line of art music. Mm. Music that's written for specific instruments with a very specific idea in mind that's executed by those players, as opposed to a band.
Yeah.
It's like more written for a concert hall than a club. But with our particular band and all the stuff we're interested in, we're kind of doing both things, where some of the music we're doing is very much influenced by popular music, and we can see it fit in a club. And we've played a couple club gigs, not just concert halls and universities. So
I'm interested in learning, and there might be completely polar opposites, but what's the difference between like ambient music that like Brian Eno did and versus like what y'all do as well?
Mm-hmm. Ambient music, as Brian Eno puts it, it's like it's music that is indicative of place. It's not necessarily telling a story, but creating atmosphere. It's not necessarily narrative or programmatic, but something that could easily be in the background of a scene. So he's got a really great piece called Music for Airports that would be perfect for sitting in an airport, you know, waiting with very little to do except wait for your flight. Whereas what we do, it can be more composed to fit more of a storytelling with more of a specific purpose, more of your attention to be focused on it within the concert experience. It's not just about creating an atmosphere. Although, you know, the term ambient music has like a beautiful connotation and in terms of like what the sound world could be. And a lot of the composers we work with tend to be influenced by that sound world.
So if you were introducing Latitude 49's music to someone for the first time, what would be like the initial thing you would say to them?
Usually I try to keep it in as simple language as possible,
yeah,
because sometimes it's hard to explain things if you go down the rabbit hole too far. People are like, wait, what?
What? Yeah.
So, you know, I'll usually say we're an instrumental group and we play new music. And simply put, you know, in the classical world, a lot of string quartets, for example, play music by Beethoven and, you know, Bartok and Haydn. And we're sort of like that, but we're working with composers that are alive.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're a mixed group of piano, percussion, winds, and string instruments. And yeah, just kind of riff off of that.
On the group's website, there's something called the new music scene.
Yeah.
I was like, is that a genre? What is that?
The new music scene is interesting. It's an interesting term that new music geeks like us use.
I prefer recently composed.
You had asked earlier, actually, about which groups have sort of inspired us.
Yeah.
And, you know, this all ties into the new music scene. So, you know, not terribly long ago, maybe 20 years ago, there were a couple key groups that sort of saw classical music was a little bit limited by the large instrumentation of large groups like orchestras.
Oh, okay.
And
bands.
And bands that are hard to find space for. Hard, mm-hmm. You have to have a director to govern everything.
Yeah.
And there was a desire to have more of a kind of hands-on, homegrown approach to building a band, essentially a classical band. And so a couple of these groups, like Eighth Blackbird, is a very famous new music group that was right on the beginning of this sort of growth of the new music scene. And so they started in Oberlin. They were also students. And their instrumentation, in fact, is very similar to ours. And there have been other groups that we really look up to, mm-hmm, as well. There are groups all across the country. In fact, groups that are younger than us that we admire and aspire to what they're creating. And so, you know, 20 years ago, it was sort of a start of like, look, we need to do something other than just solo music and large ensemble music, something that is in the chamber music repertoire where it's governed by the people within the groups. There's not a conductor. There's not one person calling the shots.
Yeah.
It's a group effort that speaks to more modern language of music. And yeah, there's a ton of groups now. There's just been a sort of a wildfire in some way of people understanding that this is a very valuable way to express themselves, that they can form these groups just like we did. It's in the students or the, you know, young musicians' power to create these things. They don't have to wait necessarily to land a job, mm-hmm, with the Dallas Symphony, mm-hmm, to make music and to have meaningful art experiences that they can share.
Are a lot of these new music groups then a lot smaller? Like, are they about your size, six people? Or
yeah, absolutely.
And some of them can be even larger. There's a really wonderful collective called the International Contemporary Ensemble, and they function as kind of like a roster of musicians. So there's about 30 of them within the collective. And depending on what the piece they're performing calls for or what the composer they're working with writes for, they'll pick from those 30 members of the roster, essentially.
And then how little, yeah, does it get from 30 people?
Sure. I mean, it could be
probably down to
two or three. And at the very most, 20 or so.
Very interesting.
Which is,
so, yeah. Typically the
really modular setup with that group.
Yeah. Typically chamber music, the kind of definition of it is typically considered less than 10 members mm-hmm. is a common sort of number for a group. Once you get past 10, you almost need a conductor.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you get into other issues. So there are larger collectives, and there's some like Alarm Will Sound is a really great group that was formed. Actually, a lot of students in Eastman School of Music in New York, University of Rochester, they formed a large group that is conducted, and they're kind of in the new music, definitely in the new music scene too. They compose, their members compose music, and they commission mm-hmm. composers to write for them the larger instrumentation. But certainly there's been a huge growth of smaller groups, anywhere from trios to, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 members. And the number of those groups has grown and grown because we can be so flexible.
Yeah.
You know, you think about what is possible, the limitations of an orchestra. There's so many limitations in how difficult it is just simply to rehearse, to find a space, to get all the instruments, all the logistics of making that happen. And it is a valuable enterprise for sure, but everything has its own issues.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about chamber music is it can be as small as a mandolin, a violin, and a drummer in a living room. And that is chamber music.
So you mentioned that your group specifically, you're all basically all over the place.
Yeah.
How do you coordinate effectively then in that way? Do you use, I don't know, some type of service where you guys communicate often?
Google Calendar.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we've kind of developed our process. You know, a lot of times when we go to universities and colleges, we give workshops for students on how to get started and, you know, kind of entrepreneurial educational talks.
Mm-hmm.
And this question comes up, like, what do you do? How do you organize yourself? And it's something that I don't want to lie and say, oh, we just have the magic method. Every group comes up with their own method, and sometimes it's by trial and error of what works.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have developed and honed our system to what works for us. So we all share Google Calendars with a central Latitude 49 email. And so that calendar is enough to give you a heart attack because you open it up and you see like 6 very active musician schedules for the whole year, which I did about 2 weeks ago and realized we only had 3 days between all of us that we were free.
And that's when you guys would rehearse then, because like my main thing that I'm thinking is, how often do you rehearse?
Yeah. So it's different than, you know, what you would think of, like a band might get together once a week or twice a week.
Mm.
Because of our situation with how far apart we are,
mm-hmm.
And because of how prescribed the music is by the composers, we're not sort of working things out in the same way that maybe a pop or a rock band would in a rehearsal. The music is in front of us. It's a matter of us executing it well and being able to listen to each other and craft the sound that we want.
Do you send MP3s or waves to each other?
Absolutely.
Then after you've recorded, like, what you feel like is a really good part of your part in the group?
Yeah, that's right. So we're just getting ready now to do a concert at Princeton University in which we're going to play a bunch of brand new pieces of music, never been performed before. And we just had a conversation this morning, like, okay, how are we going to get this together in like 2 days and perform it? And a lot of what we do is actually we'll get the score from the composer
mm-hmm.
and each of us will record our part to maybe like a click track or a metronome, and then we'll send that to other members so that they can practice their part with another person's part and see how they fit together.
Very interesting. So it's like you rehearse all separately.
Yeah,
but then,
it's kind of weird.
Whenever you all are together, then you're like, okay, let's do a couple runs or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really like, okay, when we're together, it's about, let's put it together. Let's not learn anything new now. It's mm-hmm. like it's time to get all the pieces together mm-hmm. and make this thing work.
Yeah. And we've had to move in a direction that we definitely weren't when we started. Like when we started, we were students. We were trying things out. We had twice a week rehearsals, sort of like a band.
Yeah, we didn't know how to play with each other. So.
Yeah, we were just figuring it out, you know.
Yeah.
And now there's kind of the stakes are higher because we're all over the place. And so we don't show up, we make a commitment to each other that we will learn our parts before we get together mm-hmm. and learn our parts well.
Yeah.
So when we're all together, we're not fighting over our own playing. Like, I'm not just focused on what I need to execute, but I'm actually able to listen outside of my part and, figure out how this fits
in.
Yeah. And so some of the practice that we do in advance is to have us all on that same page. And we're a very, we have leaned down and down over the years in terms of the time that we have to rehearse. So when we are rehearsing, we're like a family. Like there's no kind of skirting around the issue or nice talk in the way that you would if you were talking with someone. Maybe if I had never ever played with a violinist, I might say, oh wow, I really love the way you're, you know. We already know that we trust and love each other as musicians and as friends.
Yeah.
And so there's sort of a realness of like, okay, let's dig in. And the time is very short, but man, we squeeze every ounce out of those days and hours we have together.
Very neat.
So it's like, oh, Tim, the rhythm was good, but maybe the tuning wasn't so good. Let's
so
go
you guys
back
can
and
be
fix
honest.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's no other way to do it because time is so short. So we just got to make sure we're getting right to it. And we make a commitment, as Janie said, to each other. And it's like, along with that, you leave your ego at the door.
Mm-hmm.
So.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KWBU's Fine-Tune Music Series. Let's take a break from my conversation with Latitude 49's Chris Size and Janie Parsons to listen to their piece, Huascaran, composed by Gabriella Smith.
So a goal is to work with living composers. Whenever you were creating the group, why was it important to you to work with people of different backgrounds, different ages, to bring their music to life?
Well, I think a lot of us were coming from a more traditional approach in music school. You learn a lot of music that has already come before us. Piano, for example, the music for piano is hundreds of years old. Mm-hmm. Same with violin. There's amazing music that's been written over the past couple hundred years. And those composers are not with us anymore. So, Janie kind of hinted at this. We were looking for something to branch out of learning older music by people who we couldn't talk to, people that we couldn't be in the same room with and learn about them as a person. I mean, you can do all the reading you want, but it really does make a difference when you have the composer in the room with you at the end of the day. And that's really exciting. And because, you know, a lot of these composers that are being performed, this is kind of strictly in the classical music realm, you know, there's a lot of performance practice behind some of those pieces of music and tradition of how something is played, whereas some of this music we're working on, we don't know. We have to figure it out.
Yeah, we're creating the performance practice.
That's right. So it's a much more engaging creative process to be with someone who's got the ideas in their head, and we get to be the canvas they paint on, essentially.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was a former band kid, so I couldn't imagine, like, we're practicing this song, and the person who wrote it's literally sitting right there and listening and giving notes. So it must be a really interesting experience.
It's a thrill. Yeah. It's a thrill.
Where it's really neat is when you feel like you're really partnered with the composer in a special way, that you're creating something together.
That's right.
And where they feel like just as much as their ideas of what's in their mind influences how you play influences how they think about their own piece. And sometimes they'll even make adjustments and change things based on what they're hearing that they like or don't like. And so there is this really like a symbiotic relationship between a composer and a group. And that's something really exciting. You know, we talk about the long history of classical music, and a lot of us engage with it, just as Chris was saying, in a sort of traditional conservatory style way, where we're studying old music by people that can no longer communicate with us except for what's in the score. However, in the times of those composers, they always had musicians on their side vouching for them. And, you know, an interesting story is that of Robert Schumann and his wife, Clara. You know, she's someone that was far more of a stage presence than her husband. Mm. And in her lifetime, she traveled all over Europe promoting his music. And it's hard to say what the influence of his music would have been like without her. Mm. So there have always been musicians that are in composers' courts helping them be heard. And whether that's the composer themselves, even like someone like Rachmaninoff, who moved with his wife to the U.S., immigrated. If you go to Ellis Island, you can find his name, where he came through Ellis Island. And, you know, he created a career here in the United States, but is a very famous Russian composer. And so he played a lot of his own music. And so either composers that play their own music is something that's gone back for since the beginning of music creation to fellow musicians and friends who support the work, the creative work of their colleagues. And so we feel like we're not actually doing something new, even though we are doing something new. We're just doing what needs to be done so that music of today is actually heard and remembered.
In that way, if someone plays it like 100 years from now, they'll know what it's supposed to sound like.
Right. And they'll know it's sort of an artifact, a cultural artifact of our time. If you think there are certain things like Beethoven's Third Symphony has certain relevance, and his Ninth Symphony being his last has certain historic relevance to the composer and also
the time period.
Time period he's in. And some of the music that we're playing has historic influence, like a piece that Chris wrote for us is called These Were Used to Harm, and it's all in reference to violence. And we see, and was part of a larger program that we did on gun violence and how it plays out and how we engage with it as a society. Either we're infatuated by this idea of violence or how destructive it can be in our societies. And so that piece really speaks to an issue that perhaps didn't exist 100 years ago or 300 years ago in the same way that it's existing in our society today. And so we want our music not just to reflect the composers of today, but actually to reflect the things that we feel are important.
So I do want to touch on that because I thought that was really interesting that I noticed from your bio as well. Back in Chicago, you all partnered with a group called Chai Collective to raise awareness about homelessness.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned about the violence tie as well. But is it important for the group to play music that is tied to causes or like things that are happening politically?
Well, oftentimes, you know, the music that one will compose is reflective of the time, and many times it can be political. It's not our aim to be a political group, but we don't shy away from it either.
Yeah.
It's a real byproduct of the art we're working with and the medium, especially in really funny times like we're in right now.
And I think we're not trying with any of our music to make you understand how we feel or make you feel or think a certain way. It's more a matter of music is a tool to allow you to think for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so music allows you the opportunity to sit with your own thoughts and to allow those thoughts to develop. And there's not a whole lot of things in our world that allow us to do that, actually sit and think. And so if something that we are saying as a group, you know, we don't have any vocalists in our ensemble, so it's strictly instrumental. So we're not using words even.
Yeah.
And so it's in some way, even when we're speaking about violence, it is somewhat abstract because we're not actually speaking using words.
So people could feel two different ways about
absolutely.
Three different, right. However many different ways.
And we don't want to be a political group in the sense that we only choose political topics.
Right.
We just want to do things that we are passionate about, that we feel strongly about. And I think we felt very strongly about the violence program because it has affected so many of us in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the composers who wrote us a piece, his grandmother had been killed in a mass shooting.
Mm.
And so it was very evocative and provoking to think about how violence generationally affects people and affects our society. And, you know, that's a more dark topic. We've also done other projects that are themed in ways of other things that we feel are important. We had a whole concert based on memory and how we remember things. And so much of what music is in some way is a memory. We remember certain songs. We remember the way someone made us feel, or we remember early experiences. So we were exploring memory through music.
So do you all work with the composer to choose those topics to dedicate the music to, or is that something that the composer chooses?
Oftentimes it's what the composer chooses. What we tend to do is find music that will kind of culminate into a program, and we'll find the ties between the pieces to create like a theme to the concert experience. So oftentimes we'll think about, okay, what's a topic that, you know, we could really explore through music? The memory concert was the first time we did that, and it was amazing to just use music in a way that we hadn't before. As young musicians, we were really using it to explore something that we might take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with the violence concerts.
Yeah.
And we have a new one coming called Play, which will explore the idea of play and the state of play.
So I do want to point out that both of you are also involved in various other groups on top of you both teaching at Baylor. Janie, you're also in a group with an oboist, Meredith Height, called Lumina Duo.
Yeah, that's correct.
And Chris, you are in a troupe group called Willow, mm-hmm. which you've described to me as collaborative and interdisciplinary.
That's right.
On top of that, you're also in a duo called Archisms and working on a solo project called Skies. And I know you were here actually in the KWBU studios on Conversations with Creative Waco mm-hmm. to talk about being the music director for Gobsmacked with Out on a Limb.
That's right.
So y'all have really gotten into the Waco community deep there.
It's a good place to be and a good time to be here.
Yeah. So what have your experiences with the music scene in Waco been like here since you moved here?
Sure. Like I said, it's kind of like a really good time to be here because I think there's a lot of really awesome growth and conversation happening on small businesses,
mm-hmm.
People bringing their passion for their craft or their business and making it realized here. And, you know, just the other week, there was a really great event with Keep Waco Loud and the Texas Music Office. And
yeah.
It was an amazing event to see just how diverse the music scene in Waco is. We got here, I guess, this is our third year being here. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things I did was I reached out to a colleague and I asked, who's making work? Who's doing what in town? And he kind of gave me a couple names. And I reached out to those folks and asked, hey, let's meet for coffee and talk about what you do. I'll talk about what I do. Maybe there's an opportunity later to work together. And that's kind of how Gobsmacked worked with Out on a Limb and Brooke Schlechte. But, you know, there's also a thriving punk scene. There's also a thriving hip-hop scene. Yeah. I mean, Prescription, you know, he's great. And, you know, it's been really great to be welcomed with open arms and open ears.
Well, compared to the other cities you've lived in, because you were in Chicago before this, how does Waco compare to, I know that they're way bigger than Waco, but like what's unique about it?
Yeah, it's a whole different scene. You know, every city has its own vibe.
Yeah.
And the truth is that it's easy for small towns, I say small towns, we all know Waco is a city.
It's a college town.
Yeah, college town.
A small city.
There you go. A growing city.
True. I like that. It is.
But we know that the scene is going to be different than a place like Chicago where we came from, or New York, for example. Like, you can't even compare Chicago and New York because they're just two totally separate places. And so the best way to think about it is, like, what are we actually doing here in Waco that's truly Waco?
Yeah.
You know, like, let's not try to be the next Austin because we're not going to be the next Austin. And let's not bring all our artists in from Austin. Let's actually celebrate what's happening in our community and build a community that sponsors and admires art. It's like locally grown.
Shout out to Creative Waco.
Yeah. So there are some great groups. Like Creative Waco has been really instrumental in being a foundation for a lot of growth in the community and having arts be heard and seen. People think that, you know, economics and tourism and these kind of things all depend on businesses, but it's so much more than businesses that bring people to a community. It's the arts around them. It's
cultural
everything.
Happenings.
It's the cultural happenings. It's environmental things. Are there parks? Are there places for people to go with families? You know, we see that with the Silos. One of the great things about the Silos is just that there's space to bring your family and have a kind of a neat experience and with good food. So as we've seen things grow and change in Waco, there's more opportunity for people to make their voices heard.
So what are some of those like unique things, like if you were to describe Waco with a couple adjectives in the music scene, like what would you say to people who don't know anything about it?
I would say it's a budding scene. Like it's in its early stage of really being something. It's growing. There are a few places like Cultivate 712 that have been great little places, at least in our field, to have venues to play and where people are experiencing other things. You know, they can go for a glass of wine on first Fridays and then walk down the street and hear live music.
Mm-hmm.
And so those kind of experiences really bring people into Waco as an arts destination.
Mm-hmm. I think something that was really apparent at this event at Brotherwell, you know, just a couple weeks ago, was that there's a lot of different voices. And I think the more those different voices can have a conversation with each other, the better off the whole live music scene will be. I would love to connect with more people, and I think it's time. You know, I think it's very apparent that there's a lot of folks here who are making music, who are making art, and it's time for us to come together and really build the scene into what we want it to be.
So, yeah, we have mentioned that there are several good things happening, but what are some things that you two would be looking for in the future with all these people trying to grow this scene into something really big?
Sure. I would love to see, like, a music festival happen here, a music festival including a ton of different music. I would love to see experimental music. I would love to see hard rock music. I would love to see hip hop on it. I would love to see
classical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everything. Like, let's throw it all together and celebrate how much diversity there is within this community, you know?
So I actually did a roundtable with your guys' dean, Dr. Gary Mortensen.
Sure.
And what was interesting, and I wanted to ask you guys this, he said that there are some musicians that literally travel all the time, and so basically they're homeless. Did you guys ever experience that or know anybody who has experienced that kind of lifestyle?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. We have a friend who lives in a van.
Yeah, actually, he's part of Willow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was here for Gobsmacked. And there are other musicians, this wonderful, wonderful percussionist. His name's Tatsuya Nakatani. He and his wife get in this large conversion van, loads up all of his gear. They have a little kitchenette. They have a bed in there. They cook. And wherever they park, that's where they sleep. And kid you not, on the road for 6 months out of the year, every day there's a gig, and they're driving somewhere all over the country, all over North America. And it's unreal.
So it's like you really have to, like, I think when people think, oh, that person's homeless, they think it's like a bad thing. But for them, it's like a really good lifestyle for them since they are musicians. Because they're going to different gigs all over the world.
It's also nice to get off the road and sleep in your own bed and cuddle with your cat.
We actually have had visions of, like, in the summer, because this summer we were away for so much and we were traveling quite a bit, of, like, taking an RV next time so we could take our cat and, like, driving all over to the places we need to go and then knowing that we have, like, a really comfortable bed to stay in every night.
Yeah, but that's nice.
But, you know, we're pretty much stationed here in Waco during the school year. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have the consistent work. And so musicians have always been, for since the beginning, have been troubadours, you know, who go from one place to another and bring tales of the journeys and the places they've been on and the music that they pick up along the way. And that's a really beautiful thing about this sort of bohemian lifestyle of musicians. In some ways, can be both beautiful and also frustrating and stressful in many aspects, just like any traveling job where you're away a lot has its ups and downs.
So what are some upcoming projects people can expect from Latitude 49, as well as other groups you both are in, and some personal projects?
Sure. So Latitude 49 will actually be releasing its second album this year on New Amsterdam Records, which is a really great label, kind of dedicated to this weird genre of new music, and they call themselves an indie classical label, which is really cool.
That
because,
is cool.
Yeah, and a lot of the artists on there, they're bridging multi-genres, so it's a perfect fit for this project. We'll be performing at Princeton University in a couple weeks, and then we'll be heading to the University of Tennessee Martin to work with their students. And we'll be doing an album release show later in the year promoting that upcoming album.
The concerts that we have with Latitude are really compact and built around projects. And so we're certainly, you know, we've already basically booked for this year. And so we're looking now for even for 20 and 21 for booking.
Wow.
For concerts and residencies and those kind of things. So that's really exciting. And then both Chris and I have pet projects that we do on the side. You know, we have a cat, but we don't have kids. So this is the kind of insanity
do you guys
that
sleep?
Happens.
I mean, like, I was reading your guys' bio. I was like, do these guys sleep?
Not as much as we should.
No, I don't.
I mean, it's kind of like what Janie said earlier. Like, if you don't imagine yourself or envision yourself doing anything else, that's why you do music. And that's all
we
do.
That's who you are,
That's who we are, and that's who we've become.